Morning, I'm Felicia King, and you're listening to Breakfast Bites. Today's show is about what really happens to your security when you go to the cloud. I know we've all been using cloud services for quite some time. I mean, I guess let's first define what I mean by cloud services. I'm talking about something that is hosted externally, someplace such as maybe Amazon Web Services, Azure, Office 365, even Mozy, all of your email services, certainly Gmail, Yahoo Mail, all of these sorts of things. Literally, cloud services are anything that is not under your complete control in a premise owned by you. And when I say premise, I'm talking about a physical location. So in this context, we use the terms cloud versus on-premise. There's also some terms referred to as private cloud. Now, private cloud is where an organization will purchase hosting of a server itself on a cloud space, but then they manage it themselves, and it's supposedly locked down, and there's all of these security layers around it. However, I would argue that there's still that's not as secure as on physical on-premise. So when you look at private cloud, what control do you have over, say, perimeter authentication, even attempts to authenticate? Whereas with on-premise, you can completely stop attempts to authenticate from happening. And this whole attempt to authenticate is really the crux. This is the thing we have to focus on. When you look at the statistics, 74% of breaches in the last several years, literally breaches, I'm not talking about like malware infections or ransomware or something like that. No, I'm actually talking about the bad guys have successfully gained access to a system that they are not authorized to have access to. 74% of those were due to credential theft. So you could definitely say, well, ransomware or a piece of malware, something like that, actually compromised the credentials. Perhaps a remote access Trojan with a keystroke logger compromised those credentials, and then those credentials were utilized. Well, the thing is that there are reasonable mitigations in order to prevent an unauthorized person from using the stolen credentials to do more evil. So this is the crux that we have to understand. Now, there's several big things to take away out of this. Number one is, how in the world do you evaluate cloud-hosted services for being secure enough or not? I think there's actually a simple explanation for that, and I'll share that with you. But another piece here is, well, what do you have to do in order to ensure that you're doing your part to mitigate that credential theft? And the answer to that is obviously utilize systems that actually enable you to have the protections in place. Some of them, there's a ton of systems out there that just have absolutely raging, pathetic levels of security. So you have to use a system that is actually going to enable you to have security. But then secondly, you have to set it up, and you have to be diligent and vigilant about it. So let's first start with this concept of, how do you assess a particular system for adequate levels of security? Well, let's look at some examples, and I'll talk about good and bad. So if we look at a simple Microsoft account, now a Microsoft account is free. Everybody can have one. It can be associated with any email address. A Microsoft account gives you the ability to authenticate utilizing alternate methods of multi-factor authentication. So there's the authenticator app itself. You can receive a phone call, and you can also receive a text message. Now, we all know that the authenticator app is actually the most secure option. First of all, it's going to work even where you can't receive text messages, which is really relevant because sometimes you're going to be in a big steel and concrete building and you don't have any cell phone coverage. So if you're relying upon a two-factor authentication mechanism that relies upon you getting a text message, I mean, not only can that text message be intercepted and your phone can be hacked and things like that, but you won't receive that text message. So even just from a practicality standpoint, that's not the greatest option. I do like all these multi-factor authentication systems that actually allow for multiple techniques to be used so that if one technique isn't working at that time, then you can select an alternate technique and then they email you and let you know that a new device, your account has been accessed from a new device compared to what they had previously had on file for you. Absolutely crucial, that type of information. Now, in the best of my knowledge, the only two companies that really have got their game together with regards to getting all of those parts and pieces in place is Microsoft and Google. Everybody else is either completely lacking in security, which I find to be completely unacceptable, but then they maybe just have basic security. If you look at Twitter, Twitter does allow for text-based authentication. LinkedIn allows for text-based second factor of authentication. So at least that's something. We talked about the Social Security Administration. They had originally allowed for the SMS-based authentication. But the problem was that they got a whole bunch of feedback that, well, gee, not everybody's actually got a text messaging enabled phone. I mean, I can imagine. I mean, I know of a number of people over the age of 80 that don't have a cell phone. So clearly that's not going to work for them. So there needed to be multiple methods. You should be able to enroll SMS. You should be able to enroll just a regular phone call that you pick up. And you should be able to enroll an authenticator app. Furthermore, you should be able to enroll more than one device as an authenticator app. This is a crucial piece. If you look at a company called TeamViewer, they do allow two-factor authentication, but they do it in a way that does not allow you to enroll more than one device. So if you're in the process of migrating from one phone to another, then you can't, you basically have to completely disable multi-factor authentication in order to enroll the other device. So this is a real problem because maybe what you needed in order to authenticate to get in there to disable multi-factor authentication was actually the device that either, went in the drink or you lost it or somehow you don't have that thing anymore. So now you got a real problem, and I'll be blunt, their response time on support is not that great. And TeamViewer has a very good product, but they really need to pay more attention to feature enhancements in their security, and they need to pay more attention to support response time, in my opinion. Okay, so we know that there are some companies that are doing it really well, and we know what those signs of them doing it really well are. They offer you an authenticator app, they offer you text messaging as a second factor of authentication, or they'll offer you phone calls where you actually receive a phone call and they say, oh, your code is 123456. And then you type in as your second factor of authentication on whatever the device is that you're trying to multi-factor authenticate. And and that code obviously changes in a very short period of time. That's the whole point. That the point here with two-factor authentication is that some person in an unauthorized location who is not you cannot authenticate. Now, let's talk about how this perimeter has changed. The perimeter is the authentication. The perimeter is you go to yahoo.com and you put in your username and password. That's the perimeter. So it's no longer this perimeter of Are you even coming from an authorized IP address to be able to even attempt to authenticate? Well, when you're talking about on-premise infrastructure, you can't even attempt to authenticate unless you've already made it past other security protection mechanisms, such as the traffic is coming from a set of IP addresses or an IP range that is allowed to even attempt to authenticate. And once we push into the cloud, you're now opening it up to anybody, anywhere in the entire world, any time of day, can attempt to authenticate to your account. Now, just think about that for a second. Now, if you're not using multi-factor authentication, or if you've selected to put your trust in a system that doesn't even allow multi-factor authentication, then I really have to question the decision-making process there. Because if stolen credentials can occur, somebody in a foreign country can log on to your account and can do whatever with whatever it is that that account gives them access to, and you don't even have a notification system to validate that that has happened, to notify you that says, hey, somebody's just logged on to your account from China. And you think to yourself, I'm not in China. I think maybe I ought to do something about that. Now, of course, if you step that up a little bit, one of the few systems that exists nowadays that actually has what's called a kind of a behavioral analytics and rule sets around things that are geographically impossible is Office 365. When you're utilizing E5 licensing, and of course, all the security analytics and behavioral rules have actually been set up, which is no small feat. I mean, if you're going to set that up, you really have to be a security architect like myself. This is not something that I would expect an IT administrator or an IT manager of a typical company to even be able to handle. I mean, the level of complexity and sophistication is it's significant. I mean, it's really, really significant, the skill it takes to set this up. Now, that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with or they didn't create the system to be user-friendly or whatever. It's just the concepts of all the moving parts and pieces that you have to put together in order to make this work are you really have to have a very deep and wide breadth of knowledge and experience, and that's just simply something that most people don't have. Okay, that's all it comes down to. It's not like Office 365 is unnecessarily complicated or something. So, this whole element of you've pushed the perimeter to the authentication process, to the credential. So, the very first thing, and frankly, the last thing that somebody hits in order to get access to your stuff is the credential. So, it's not a matter of putting up barriers like an on-premise scenario where there's these barriers that say somebody can't even begin to start to try to authenticate to those devices using your credentials. Those protections, by and large, don't exist when you're talking about cloud stuff. Now, let me throw out a little some pieces that you should really be aware of, but that are probably going to freak you out. And frankly, I hope they do freak you out a little bit because this is the kind of stuff that I find to be completely reprehensible in the IT industry. So we can look at a particular company who is doing email-based encryption specifically for the healthcare industry. Now, their system does a really good job of encryption for emails for the healthcare industry. However, it lacks basic functionality. Number one, it has no multi-factor authentication. Really? I mean, it boggles my mind. The other thing is there's no Azure Active Directory plugin. So, and this, by the way, is something that is pretty easy to set up. Most organizations nowadays are actually using Office 365. If they have E3 licensing, they're going to have Azure Rights Management. Pretty much everybody's going to end up having at least E3. Even if they've only got E1, they still have Azure Active Directory. Okay, everybody who's using Office 365 has an Azure AD tenant. Now, even if all you've got is Azure AD Basic, you can still set up authentication for single sign-on, which is known as SSO. So, single sign-on authentication into linked systems. Now, if you're a medical practice and you've made a decision to utilize this email encryption system as your, as your special system, if the company, Sirius, by the way, is the name of the company, if they don't know how to do their own multi-factor authentication system, why aren't they just enabling a company, an organization, to connect their Azure AD to the Sirius email platform so that when staff at the medical organization log on with their Office 365 credentials using multi-factor authentication, using the wonderful multi-factor authentication system that's built into Office 365, then they can SSO authenticate into the email encryption platform. I mean, that's truly the way it should be done. But the fact that we have a company that is supposedly in the business of securing data, but yet they don't even offer multi-factor authentication for accounts that are protecting health information, I find this reprehensible. I don't think you can ethically say that you're offering a secure solution if you're not offering multi-factor authentication as part of it. I mean, if you offer it and then the end users of your solution are too ignorant and unwilling to utilize it, because it's just a choice. That's all it is. Multi-factor authentication is not difficult to use. When somebody says that they don't want to use multi-factor authentication, what they're doing is they're basically saying they're willing to accept the risk of having their account breached. That's what they're saying. Now, if they're in a position to where they are the fiduciary possessor of their customer and clientele data, if at that point in time they choose to not use multi-factor authentication, I don't have any kind words for that because I think that the risk is significant as compared to their responsibility to protect that information. So, Sirius is one example of a company that's not offering multi-factor authentication that, boy, they darn well should have. And I actually talked to them about the Azure AD linkage, and they seemed to claim ignorance over understanding what I was talking about and didn't want to talk about it further. So, suffice to say, I'm not recommending their platform as a result of that. I hope that they make a different decision in the future. Let's talk about a couple more examples. SolarWinds Enable is a company that makes remote monitoring and management software. The majority of their implementations are still on-premise. And when I say majority, I'm talking maybe 55%. I don't have the exact statistics. But it's not like their cloud infrastructure is only 1%. Their cloud infrastructure is probably like 45% of the utilization, the user base of SolarWinds Enable. So, with it being a remote monitoring and management platform specifically for the managed services provider industry, what you're talking about is anyone who can actually gain access to valid credentials that can log them into a SolarWinds Enable tenant, then gains full God-level access to all of the systems that that account has access to. Okay? So when you figure that the majority of the individuals that actually have SolarWinds Enable accounts are IT administrators, IT managers, IT engineers, these sorts of people, they're utilizing that tool for remote administration and management purposes, which means you ultimately have administrator access to all of the remotely connected systems. Now, if that system does not allow multi-factor authentication, that's a catastrophic failure right there. Again, I don't know how you can claim that you are a company in service to the IT industry and that you're being a good fiduciary of access to extremely privileged data, which is what full admin access to several hundred, if not thousands, of systems is. You know, per account. I'm talking about per account. Your typical managed service provider is probably handling, you know, 50 or I should say 500 endpoints and up. So, from that perspective, a compromise of a single credential could compromise 500 endpoints. That could actually be 500 different organizations. It's probably not. It's probably more like 12 organizations or something like that. But suffice to say, that's still tons and tons and tons of endpoints that have been compromised simply because multi-factor authentication was not an option that was even available to the end user of that system. Now, the other thing that's not really available is any sort of awareness about, oh, well, somebody has just logged on to our system with your account from a system that you haven't logged on from before. So there's no email notification system that says to make you aware that somebody has just utilized your credentials on a previously unused device, which is most definitely a notification system that should exist. I mean, there's just no reason that that shouldn't exist. To me, that's considered to be ba like basic functionality. Okay, so let's talk about another system. So Acronis is a company that has historically made very good backup software. They've recently, I'd say in the last 2 to 3 years, put up this platform called Acronis Cloud. It's a cloud-hosted version of their software package, so they provision licensing there. It's a cloud-managed platform, and it also provides cloud storage of backups. So even in the scenario where you're not utilizing Acronis Cloud for cloud storage of backups, the fact still remains that anyone that has an Acronis Cloud account, those credentials are then opening up access to the backup plans and the stored credentials of being able to redirect those backups to someplace else or access the backups and then extract data. You know, just use your imagination as to where that can go. So again, we're talking about a platform that's designed for the IT industry from an administrative god-level access, and yet there's no multi-factor authentication enabled, even possible to be enabled by the end user of the system. And it's my understanding as of Monday, this week, that they have no plans to implement that. So when I'm evaluating a platform for use, I look at those things such as, is this cloud system weakening or improving the security of the solution that I can offer? And you should use the same criteria for yourself. So if the solution is improving the security, then it can be an acceptable solution. But of course, you then have to actually use it properly. Meaning, if they're offering two-factor authentication or multi-factor authentication, then you need to enable it and actually use that diligently. However, if the system does not offer multi-factor authentication, then frankly, I don't see how you can use it. I mean, really, how can you? Because at least if you keep your stuff on-premise, number one, the bad guys can't even start to authenticate to your internal systems because they can't get through to be able to do that. So where's the perimeter? Well, it's not at the credential anymore. The perimeter is at a network layer. So I know that all of this is possible with all these IT systems if people actually cared to put that functionality in place, because If you look at a free content management system, like a website hosting or a website platform, okay, websites are typically built with content management systems these days. If you get a hardening application like a web application firewall, install it on the website, and then do a number of other hardening functionalities. I'm not going to go through all that because I've already done a radio show on that. You can have multi-factor authentication. You can even be whitelisting the IP addresses of administrative connections, meaning that again, the perimeter is not the credential. What is the perimeter is the fact that it's now the network layer, which means the bad guys can't even attempt to try to authenticate to the system because there are other rules that say you can't even attempt to authenticate unless you're coming from a set of this authorized configuration, whether it be a range of IP addresses or single IP addresses or whatever. Now, it's my understanding that E5, with all of this special configuration that goes on top of that with EMS and Cloud App Security and various things like that in Office 365 E5, is going to do exactly that same thing that we're already doing with content management systems for websites. By the way, not all CMSs can actually support that. And I always laugh. In fact, I actually saw a website yesterday by a guy in Racine who claims to be, an IT consultant, but yet his website is on WordPress and his administrator page is open to the world. Now, if we're talking about somebody who cannot even secure their own website, then I have to question, is this somebody that you want to do business with? Now, maybe it is, but maybe it's not. That's got to be a decision that you need to make. But if somebody can't even secure their own website, then you certainly don't want to be utilizing them for website management services. And you really have to ask, what other skills do they have? And do they have the skills needed to get the job done for you? So, multi-factor authentication, absolutely crucial. When you go to the cloud, you have to ask, is the perimeter the credential? Because if the authentication process with that credential is now the perimeter, that is the first thing that the bad guys have to get past, and in many cases, the last thing that the bad guys have to get past in order to get access to your stuff, then the effectiveness of that credential processing system, of that authentication system, the effectiveness and the security integrity capabilities of that system must be thoroughly vetted. So, if they don't give you an option to do multi-factor authentication, I would strongly suggest you probably don't want to use that system. Even if you're talking strictly on a basis of reputation, if you allow somebody to compromise those credentials, log in as if they are you, and then do stuff, that can really damage your reputation and make it so that other people just don't want to do business with you. So, many things for you to think about. I hope you found it instructive. As always, if you have questions or comments, you can either fill out the contact form on my website or you can email me. All right, have a wonderful weekend.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe,